Welcome to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs, and this week on Technotopia, we have Ruben Balling, cartoonist and general funny guy. This is Technotopia.
Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.
Welcome back to Technotopia, a podcast about a better future. This is going to be one of my favorite podcasts. Ruben Balling, he's a cartoonist. I've read you, Ruben, since high school. Is that feasible?
I've been doing it a long time. I in presentations, I used to say how long I've been a cartoonist, like the last couple times, and I get an audible gasp from the audience. I've stopped saying that.
So you do Tom the Dancing Bug, which is, right. I don't even know how to describe it. There's only a few of you guys left in the world, right? So you have a large format cartoon, multiple panels, each one is on a different topic. You have recurring things.
Yeah. It's weird because when I sort of started the comic strip, I sort of made it up. There was nothing like it. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, other people were doing really sort of the exact same thing, making up this new style of cartooning, which was new at the time in the 90s. So a lot of us started, you know, we're in alternative newspapers, these alternative weeklies.
Exactly.
And now some of us are gone. Some of us have morphed into some combination of newspaper cartooning and web cartooning.
Okay. So let's go back to, this is an interesting question that I once talked to, remember Soul Coughing, the band Soul Coughing?
Oh yeah.
So Mike Doty was the lead singer of that. And he's still a musician, but he said that he, in today's day and age, if he had started in 2006, he had started Soul Coughing in 2006. He would not have had the success that he had. He came up in just the right time for there to be a mass media, there to be mass CDs. You could actually sell a physical product, that sort of thing. You started back in, let's say, 80s, 90s doing this. Would you have the same success now that you had then? And is there some specific secret sauce that happened back then that allowed you to do what you're doing?
Well, yeah, I think at that time it was 1990 when I first mm-hmm. started the comic. And I literally made up this style of comic strip because it's the dimensions of a piece of copy paper. It's 8.5 by 11. And that's why it's these dimensions. So it's like I had no marketing plan involved at all. And yet at the exact same time, again, other people were starting to do something similar, maybe not for the same reasons in the same format, but it was the start of the alternative newspaper scene that really helped, because you know I started you know in one alternative newspaper in New York, and I would call up one in, let's say, Phoenix, and they might say, oh yeah, we're expanding, and we need a new comic. So yeah, the answer is yes, we'll run your comic. So I built up, you know, a bunch of comics, because as I was expanding in this universe of expanding alternative news weeklies, and I'm sure there's a technology reason why these things were able to suddenly flourish, whereas they couldn't. I mean, I think there were lower obstacles to entry to the mm-hmm. newspaper industry at that time. So all these things were sort of popping up, and they were youth oriented. And at the time I was young. That was very fortuitous. I happened to have invented or developed or made up something that was exactly what they were looking for. if I started now, I mean, would just be a web cartoonist, and there are, anybody can be a web cartoonist if you've got a computer and and that's it, a connection. So then the issue would not be getting into newspapers. It would be getting the attention of people, which is what I'm doing, you know, now in addition to that. So it's just, you know, can I, how many hits can I get? Can I draw well enough and can I promote myself well enough to get hits on this? So yeah, cartooning has totally changed. I mean, I couldn't have imagined the stuff, the market and that there is for, and the business model that there is for cartooning when I started. Mm-hmm. When I started, it was my style of cartooning was either get into newspapers or that's it.
Yeah.
It had to be physical.
And you, and basically, I guess it was Tom Tomorrow, and who else did this? Nobody else. Really? Well, what's his name? Matt Groening, too. I don't know where the heck that that guy ended up.
He seems I don't know. He's probably picking up paper somewhere. He invented, I mean, again, I made this up, but he really, I think from, to go way back, Jules Pfeiffer sort of invented the form, because he was in the Village Voice and he was sort of doing something very similar to what I'm doing. Matt Groening created the commercial necessity for it, because he was really in the news, in this alternative newspaper industry. He worked for, I think it was LA Weekly.
Mm-hmm.
And so his comic was there, and he was the one who sort of set the standard for, if you want to be an alternative Newsweekly, then you got to have his comic in it. Or yeah, something similar. And I became I and Tom Tomorrow and Ted Rall and Ward Sutton and Durf at various stages became the something else as the industry matured.
So that's interesting. So, and I don't expect you to tell us what androids are going to look like in the future for this. Don't even worry about that. So this is a fascinating conversation in itself. So it's interesting that we could feasibly name the total number of alternative cartoonists who are doing what you're doing, in probably a breath. We could, it's, you said Durf, you said Matt Groening, you said, Tim, Rawl.
Yep. Yep.
And that's basically it, right?
Yeah. I mean, there were some that were in fewer newspapers, but mm-hmm. basically, yeah, that's it. That's, there's a small group, Lloyd Dengel. I mean, I can keep thinking.
Sure. But just off the, yes, the guys that I would, the guys that I'm out of the scene to
the
a degree.
Main players, for sure.
The name players that you could name to me that have name recognition simply because I grew up in an era of alternative news weeklies. And I think that's a fascinating concept. The idea that there was a certain amount of technology that allowed some dude like to smoke a lot of pot to start an alternative weekly in, I don't know, Boulder or right, Madison, Wisconsin, and turn it into the Onion. Right. So
exactly,
we're in a,
yep,
so we were just on that. We're on that strange cusp right back then of mass media that was cheap enough to give away, which is a really important thing, because newspapers weren't given away up to that point. Right.
That's right. Yeah. These were free weeklies.
Mm-hmm.
Almost all, you know, Village Voice charged up to a point, but yeah, that's right. It was super cheap. They had really small staffs. They had some kind of new layout program where they could lay out a newspaper easily. I was never involved in that. I would just go into the office and hand in my comic in the beginning.
No. So that's interesting. So they basically had PageMaker right then. Not PageMaker. Quark Express.
That sounds more right. Yeah,
that's right. That's
like
right.
That.
Quark Express was the one. Everybody loved it, and you could lay things out. Fascinating. So you're at a technological inflection point, because
yeah,
you're just at the cusp of desktop print publishing printing. And then
right through no plan of my own,
what I wanted
to do could not be in daily newspapers, although it ended up being in a bunch. I mean, it just was because they needed to compete with alternative weeklies.
Sure.
But yeah, when I started, I saw this, and then there was this technology that allowed newspapers to say, you're exactly what we're looking for. One of the few times in my life in the right place at the right time.
All right. So let's move forward now. So we've established that you got extremely lucky, and you're still lucky, because if you're going through hell, keep going. So you're still doing the comic. What does this sort of art form, what is this sort of humor, where does it have a place on the web when there's so much quote unquote humor? There's so much commentary.
Yeah, that was the real tough thing, because just when I sort of built up this career and I had all these newspapers,
mm-hmm.
with alternative newspapers, everything just totally changed. The rug was pulled out from under me with, you know, as the web became more important. And I could see it coming. And I was on the web early because I was in a magazine called Salon.com.
Absolutely, yeah.
Which was really one of the first, you know, sort of real magazines on the web. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like, all right, my web strategy is that I'm on Salon. And that was not a good web strategy. Considering that, you know, that everything was going to become the web. So eventually, you know, these alternative papers started going out of business, mostly and or cutting comics because they were the first in the firing line. And so, you know, all of our, me and Tom Tomorrow and Matt Groening and everybody, we all saw our client list just demolished because of the web. And the web, I think the main way the web stole revenue was, or took revenue, was from classifieds.
Mm-hmm,
you know, Craigslist just wiped out this huge revenue source for alternative weeklies. But
that's so strange to me because the only reason I would assume the most people read the alt weeklies is basically to figure out what band is playing and then also to read that page with like you and like Bill Brezhne, the real astrology dude.
Right.
Who's always oddly right about it.
Really? I never noticed that.
Oh, yeah. It's always
straight dope. Yeah.
Straight dope.
And advice. There was an advice column. Yeah. So, yeah, those were sort of window dressing around, you know, the classifieds. And
I think that's the chocolate center of the whole
sex
thing.
Sex ads.
That was the chocolate center of the whole operation.
But yeah, I mean, even finding out where bands are, no one needs to look at a newspaper anymore to find out what's going on this weekend. It's all for free on the web, or these were free too, but it's just all ubiquitous. It's just everywhere. And of course, the whole syndication model just broke down because that's based on geographic exclusivity. Mm-hmm. So I would sell my comic to the alternative paper in Phoenix and San Francisco and Miami and New York and all these these cities. And then suddenly people are starting to realize, wait a minute, it's on the web. It's everywhere. What are we paying for? We're getting this comic, and everyone's already seen it. It's been on the web worldwide. Mm-hmm. There's no exclusivity, so that really broke things down too. So I spent a few years in the weeds, trying to figure out like panicking, like mm-hmm. Oh my God, what's happening? Everything's falling apart. It took me a while to figure it out.
So what's the answer?
Well, I ended up with more than one web client. That helps. Mm-hmm. Web clients pay like a good newspaper, but you know, you needed a lot of good newspapers. But basically, I offer temporal exclusivity instead of geographic. So Boing Boing gets the comic first on Wednesday.
Yep.
And then Daily Coast gets it on Thursday. And then Go Comics gets it on Friday. And then I've had various outlets for Monday. So you sort of stagger the release and each one pays less and less. But then the big thing was even before Wednesday, when it first premieres on the web, I started the Inner Hive service, which is that was it. The day I started that, it saved the comic strip. I mean, instantly. I didn't know what would happen with it. And day one, it instantly became my biggest single source of revenue for the comic that I'd ever had. So I needed lots of sources, but this was on the day that I launched it. It was became the biggest source. So that's it.
Does that take you out of poverty, or does that put you well within the middle class?
Well, the overall picture is there's other stuff aside from comics. So I do other stuff. So you know, the comic is once a week, and you know, in addition to, I have a series of kids books
sure.
And I do other stuff. So the comic was never going to be the whole thing, but the comic was not going to be viable unless I figured out it wasn't going to be worth my time to do it. It wasn't going to be a paying job if I didn't figure it out. And now it's doing better than ever, even in the heyday of mm-hmm. the alternative weeklies, mostly because of the Inner Hive, which has been just fantastic because it's fun. I send out the comic. People, I have a direct relationship with my readers instead of being filtered through newspapers, editors, and advertisers. I'm in the best place I've ever been.
Did I think I feel like I wrote about the Inner Hive. That's how I got in touch with you.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah. Yeah, it's great. It's, you know, I get emails back from people when I send it in, and it just makes the whole thing more fun.
Okay. So we're going back to the question, the original question about Mike Doty and finding his fans. So is this your, were you able to do that because you had a certain group of fans who have known you since the 90s?
Yeah. I think that's why. I mean, you have a certain number of fans. You have a certain number of fans that are very motivated, which was really what helped me. You know, not just casual fans, but people who really wanted to, whatever Tom Dancing Bug was doing, they wanted to be part of it. And that's why, you know, day one, it just worked. But yeah, I had built that up over time. And I think it would be, well, harder or maybe easier, to build up that fan base today. I mean, there's tons of web cartoonists who do that and have huge fan bases and very motivated fan bases who have just started relatively recently, relative to me, and are hugely popular. So it could happen fast. I don't know if my comic is good enough to catch on that fast on the web. I think it was more I had to build it up in different ways. It's, I don't know if I can make it an overnight sensation.
Yeah. You've got somebody like the Oatmeal who can raise millions of dollars for a Tesla museum, which is pretty
right,
cool.
Right. I'm thinking of him. Yeah. That's amazing.
But then again, that's the only guy I think of, right? It's the, I can't think of any other.
I think there are others.
There's,
I think
Toothpaste, the toothpaste guy running with toothpaste or whatever.
Oh, I don't know that one. Yeah, yeah, I don't follow it. I know, right? Saturday Morning Cereal is a big one. I think he's doing great. So yeah, I mean there are a bunch who do that. I don't follow it that closely, but people are doing it and people are getting, you know, sufficient traction. But you know, I did it through a gatekeeper mechanism. I had to convince an editor here, an editor there, and then build up my fame, and then, you know, and then Salon, and then Boing Boing, and all this stuff. And then I was able to launch this subscription service. I would think it'd be really hard, and these guys are really good to be able to do that, to just from scratch on the web, just purely directly with readers.
So as opposed to predicting the future, in why don't you give advice for the future? What sort of things should a young cartoonist do now to find some success? I think we've gone over this a little bit, but I think maybe there's a few specific things we could talk about.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, when people ask about this, I always cringe because I once was giving a panel with a couple of other guys about cartooning, and it was right about when I was going in the weeds, and I didn't know what was going on. And I said, it was such a negative panel. There were, you know, this audience was listening, and I was saying, you know, everyone was saying, well, it's so much worse than when we started. It's almost impossible to get started. And then afterwards I saw online, someone was complaining about me and the others saying, look at these guys, they made it and they say there's no room for anyone else. And, and I realized, you know, I was wrong. Yeah, I was too negative, because the truth is, If someone should have said that to me when I was starting, and it wouldn't have mattered a bit, I would have kept going, and I would have, and there are anybody in that audience who could be dissuaded wasn't going to make it anyway. Most of the people who are going to make it would listen to me say, yeah, it's impossible now, it's so hard, and say, oh, well, I'm still going for it. So the whole key is to just keep going against all odds.
Keep doing it. So what's the recommendation here? Or is the recommendation, what would you say, give up now in hopes that the person says, I'm not going to give up?
No, ignore it. If it's meant to be, and I listen, everybody, all my friends who are in this, and probably everyone who's in, you know, writing and comedy and almost everything, they say, nothing would have stopped me from trying. No, nothing anyone could say. You know, we're in this weird, bizarre, universe of comic strips, when me and these friends like Durf, and there's not, aside from Mac Raining, there's not this great path to untold wealth and success. And yet, you know, nothing was going to stop us from doing this and trying and doing it, you know, for no money for a long time, until we saw where we were going. So yeah, I would say if you have that level of dedication, then you know, fasten your safety belt and get on it.
Don't let some crotchety old
don't let some jerk who's dissuade you, because you're gonna do it. But I don't know specifically, you know, just putting your stuff on the web. And then once you're talking about it being on the web, there's all kinds of stuff. Now I started InnerHive, I believe, before Patreon. Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of mechanisms to get stuff out. You know, I only started the InnerHive because I discovered MailChimp. Mm-hmm. And I realized they'll do most of the work for me, because I thought about doing this on my own and maintaining the list and all doing all that. And it sounded like a, you know, then subscription list and who's paid up and who's not. And I said, I can't do that. So yeah, MailChimp at the start did all that for me. That's the only reason I did it. So yeah, there's a lot of things out there to help you. And there are a lot of people doing this. There's a ton of web cartoonists, okay, with, you know, varying degrees of success, however you want to define it.
Yeah. Is there a future in art?
There's the big question I was dreading. I mean, any big question I was dreading. all these small questions you've asked,
we're 21 minutes in.
When's he going to ask about the future and some pronouncement I'm supposed to make?
You don't have to make any pronouncement. I mean, so you can even do it. You can say from any standpoint. We're on when this goes live, I believe we're already going to know who our president is. Given the current climate online and all that other good stuff, is there a future in art? That's the question, I guess.
The answer is, of course, yes, there will always be art. And the commercial and business aspects of it will change dramatically in one way or another. You know, there will always be poetry, whatever that market is, and, you know, and comics and movies and music. The means of distributing it and the way you get paid for it and how much you get paid for it, I guess, has all changed over the last 50 years. I mean, everything has changed, and I guess it will continue to change. But, you know, like the people in the audience when I was, you know, the crotchety old man, it won't matter, because people are going to make this no matter what. And the financial chips and the commercial chips and the business chips will fall where they may. But yeah, there will be a future of art as long as Trump doesn't criminalize it, prosecute
art
people who try to make art that's critical of our glorious leader. It'll always be with us.
All right.
There's my pronouncement. I've said it. I'm on the record.
Art will always be with us. Ruben, thank you for joining me on this. This has been a real treat, and I hope I think we had a far-reaching discussion. We didn't even have to talk about technology because this is far more important than technology, I think, to a massive degree.
It's comics.
Comics. All right.
John, it's great talking with you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
So this has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs, and we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. I swallowed a fly on my run today. So hold on.
Oh, jeez.
Well, there's like a place right by the we have a wastewater plant down by the Owl's Head, like down here in Bay Ridge. And there's a running path that goes right along the wastewater plant. And there are these tiny, tiny little flies.
Oh, man.
So I went through like this cloud of flies, and every two runs I'll hit one and it'll go right down my windpipe.
And you're just sucking wind, and it goes, oh man, well, yeah. It's good. It's good protein,
good
as
protein.
You
yeah,
as
but
you run.
But it's inhaled protein. I don't know if that works that way.
I don't know if your body can ingest that way.
All right, here we go.
Maybe in the future.